Hello, this is Scott Jose, Director of the Center for Excellence in Preaching, presenting another audio on preaching article. This article was originally written by Cornelius Plantinga Jr., President of Calvin Theological Seminary. The article is titled Fittingness, and it first appeared in the January 1993 issue of Perspectives magazine. Fittingness by Neil Plantinga. In a wonderfully rich section of his book, Art in Action, Nicholas Wolterstorff says that artists inevitably perceive, manipulate, and propose fittingness between certain qualities or complexes of qualities. Aesthetic judgments then estimate the success of these artistic perceptions and proposals. What places the judgments in a class somewhere between statements of necessary truth on the one hand and mere recording of preference on the other hand is that, quote, fittingness is a feature of the reality within which we all live, end quote. Fittingness, like spirits, needs to be discerned. Well, as liturgist, pastoral care provider, preacher, and theologian, a minister will make or perpetuate hundreds of judgments. Many of these will have to do with the fittingness of some emotion, deed, or word given the reality within which we all live. For instance, for as long as anybody can tell, Christians have begun their meals with thanksgiving. In this custom, Christians follow Jewish precedent and dominical habit. Jesus gave thanks before distributing the loaves and the fish, and he gave thanks again at an ominous point in the Last Supper. Christian communion liturgies follow suit. Before presenting the gifts of God to the people of God, the celebrant summons them to lift up their hearts and to offer to God the Eucharistia, the Eucharist, the thanksgiving, for which the sacrament is named. Why? Because, as the traditional liturgies affirm in one wording or another, the Lord merits our thanksgiving. Because it is meet and right. Because it is right and proper and fitting for us to give thanks for the awful events that have reformed us and for the acts and elements and community that represent them. So often, the New Testament writers summon us to learn proprieties. Certain behaviors and emotions are proper to Christian existence, and certain others are not. So, in Colossians 3, Paul tells believers who have already died and risen with Christ in baptism to keep that rhythm going. Let your old self drown and your new self arise like some glistening swimmer whose rescued life can never again be the same. Let gloating die and let compassion arise. Let malice die and let kindness arise. Kindness is, after all, not a moral handout, not a sort of emotional welfare that we angrily pay out to the undeserving. No. Kindness, compassion, gentleness, and gratitude are the family style for the people of God. They show we have the rhythm of Christ. They show that we are acting and thinking in a way that is meet and right and proper and fitting. Of course, fittingness isn't the sort of thing you can explain very well. Fittingness is like a joke, you know, you either get it or you don't, and if you don't, you shouldn't have to ask to have it explained. So, why recite our common Christian faith at the graveside of a loved one? Why stand there together and say, we believe in the resurrection of the body and the life everlasting? Nothing requires us to confess the creed in such a setting, but neither is our graveside confession arbitrary. Rather, it's fitting. Why should a minister presiding at a wedding not exploit this role to try to sell encyclopedias to the guests? I mean, there's no law against it, after all. It's free enterprise, free country. Still, we'd find such salesmanship off-putting. It's inappropriate behavior. It's unfitting. The same goes for chatting up each act in a liturgy, as if no congregation understood the point of, say, confessing our sins. Or for telling charming stories about oneself all the time in the pulpit. Surprisingly, many of the world's great acts lie midway between what is required and what is arbitrary. In the Incarnation, the Son of God both meets and exceeds messianic expectations. He comes not only from David's line, but also from God's. In the Atonement, he represents both guilty Cain and innocent Abel, and he reconciles them to each other by a death that defeats death in the deepest magic of the universe. Like cures like. And it all seems both surprising and inevitable. Or take the creation of the world. Creation is a stupendous act of God's freedom. God hospitably making room in the universe for birch trees and bullfrogs and advertising executives. God was under no obligation to create. Still, given God's overflowing goodness and greatness, you would never want to say that creation is accidental, as if it happened one day while God was just doodling. No, neither necessity nor accident. Creation is rather a fitting act for God. It's just so much like God to create. Creation looks both free and inevitable, both apt and surprising. In this respect, Adam and Eve, each a creature delightfully fit for the other, Adam and Eve present us with an image both of the triune God and of all creation. Creation, incarnation, atonement, sacrament, and forms of Christian virtue lie fittingly in between necessity and accident. They are, so to speak, God's original artwork. Preachers are authorized publicity agents.